from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good evening. Welcome to this edition of Washington Watch. I'm Jody Heiss, a senior advisor to the president here at the Family Research Council, and extremely honored and privileged to be sitting in for Tony this week. Listen, we've got a hot program lined up for you this evening, so buckle up. We've got some breaking news that we're going to bring your way, keeping you informed as to the absolute latest as to what's happening in our country. So stay tuned. Let me give you the highlights of what we're going to be discussing. First of all, as we continue the fight to protect the unborn, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled last night to roll back many of the illegal actions that the FDA took to ease access to some of these chemical abortion drugs.
What the Fifth Circuit did here is really recognize that the FDA's actions have been unlawful from the very beginning. And it also implemented a number of requirements to put them back in place to protect women and girls.
That was Aaron Hawley from the Alliance Defending Freedom earlier this morning during a virtual press conference. And while this is a very strong victory, the three-judge panel did allow the abortion drug mifepristone to remain on the market while ongoing lawsuits proceed. But Lathan Watts with the Alliance Defending Freedom, which is, of course, the organization that brought the lawsuit against the FDA, he'll be joining me with his reaction to the court's decision from last night. And then this breaking news.
The department is taking the issue of this unauthorized disclosure very seriously. We continue to work around the clock, along with the interagency and the intelligence community, to better understand the scope, scale, and impact of these leaks.
All right, that story unfolding even while we speak. That was Pentagon Press Secretary Brigadier General Pat Ryder speaking to the press earlier today after federal investigators arrested a 21-year-old National Guardsman who's accused of massive leaks of classified military documents. We'll be joined a little bit later with retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin to discuss that issue. And then yesterday, as you'll recall, I discussed the unbelievable FBI surveillance of Christian churches. Well, it's fitting what appears to be a growing pattern of this agency, where they have been weaponized against political opponents. Well, here's the big question. Can the FBI be saved? It's gone rogue. I'll be discussing this with Kyle Serafin. He's a former FBI agent and the initial whistleblower who exposed so much of the malfeasance that currently is taking place. And then we've got more breaking news coming from the Show Me State. Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey announced this afternoon that he has issued an emergency regulation to end the transgender procedures for minors in his state. This is the first in the nation of this type. And it all started with an investigation into a rogue clinic at the Washington University in St. Louis. And literally, there are shocking treatments of children that were taking place there. Well, the Attorney General Bailey himself will be providing an update a little bit later in the program. So we've got a lot of hot topics to discuss. You don't want to miss a bit of it, but if by chance you do, you can always catch it later at tonyperkins.com. You'll also find there at the website all sorts of action items for you as well. So keep that website close at hand. All right, let's jump into our first topic. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled yesterday to uphold some key elements of a federal district court's order requiring the FDA to restore clinical safeguards for chemical abortion drugs. Most notably, abortion providers are no longer allowed to send chemical abortion drugs through the mail. That's huge. Also, the gestational age of a baby for which a mother can take the chemical drugs has been reduced from 10 weeks down to 7. Joining me now to discuss this is Lathan Watts. He's the Vice President of Public Affairs with ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom, which is the organization that brought the initial lawsuit against the FDA. Lathan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me.
Well, listen, let's just begin with your overall reaction to the court's ruling last night.
Well, it's really a win for health and safety for women and girls in this country. As you mentioned, the Fifth Circuit upheld Judge Kaczmarek's order in part, the part of it that restored those safeguards. And that is very important because the FDA had removed those in order to basically create a nationwide mail order abortion market. And those safeguards, they're crucial to protect the health and the safety of the women and the girls who would be taking these pills. So it is a victory. It is a step in the right direction. And we're grateful for that win.
Well, it really is a great step in the right direction. And, you know, I think it's fair to say, or maybe I should ask, is it fair to say that, you know, there's probably some saying that this decision didn't go far enough, but it is an enormous step in the right direction. But is it fair to say that the FDA's actions that have been going on for some 20 years covering up were illegal and unlawful throughout this whole process?
Yes. I mean, our clients, the doctors that we represent, filed a citizen petition against approval of this drug all the way back in 2000. And really, our clients are the only parties to this litigation who have followed both the science and the law from day one. The FDA declared pregnancy an illness in order to approve mifepristone in the first place, and then stonewalled our clients for 14 years. When by law they were required to respond to our client's petition after within 180 days. And then after 14 years, on the same day they finally responded, that's when they lifted all of these safety measures that had been put in place originally. And so this litigation is certainly about bringing health and safety back to the women and the girls who would be prescribed this drug, but it's also about bringing accountability to the FDA. These unelected bureaucrats have now acted with impunity through five different presidents. And it is high time that some accountability be brought to that agency. And we're grateful that the Fifth Circuit has taken a big step in the right direction.
Yeah, it's just absolutely unbelievable to me that it's taken this long. I mean, to have a federal agency deliberately hide and cover up and refuse to comply with the law is phenomenal to me. Yesterday, the Biden administration's task force on reproductive health access had another meeting. I believe it was their third meeting, and Vice President Kamala Harris was there. I want to play a clip of what she said and get your reaction to this.
We have, in effect, a situation where politicians and politics have driven lawyers to go to a court of law where a judge who is not a medical professional is making a decision to undo the ruling over 20 years ago of the FDA.
I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, let's start. I think it's fair to say she's probably not a healthcare professional herself. But the problem was 20 years ago, what they did was illegal. I mean, this is stunning. What are your reaction to this?
Yeah, exactly. And you don't have to be a medical professional. Anyone who has sat through a high school biology class knows that pregnancy is not an illness. It is a natural condition of humanity. And so, yes, it has been 20 years. It would not have taken 20 years had the FDA complied with its own rules. But because they didn't, it has taken us this long to get the case to court and finally bring some accountability to the FDA.
Yeah, and she also certainly, and this implication is not just coming from her, but the argument is that the decision by the Fifth Circuit was all politically driven. It's just the opposite, it seems to me. Even 20 years ago, the reason they ignored the law, the FDA, was for political reasons. They tried to push this thing because that was the agenda of the left, to make abortions more accessible. So the whole argument that this decision was politically driven is absolutely upside down, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, this decision and our litigation from day one has been about maintaining the rule of law, holding the FDA accountable for its own actions when it violates its own rules. The FDA, you know, all the way back in 2000, as we've said, abandoned its mission to protect the health and safety of consumers in favor of advancing a political agenda to create a mail order abortion regime in this country. And had they complied with their own rules, this litigation would have been brought much sooner, and this could have been resolved years ago, but they didn't. And so that's why we're here today.
Well, I think that's a great point. I mean, obviously, one of the big reasons the FDA exists is for safety. And they did not even do the research on the safetiness of this drug, at least not in any kind of thorough fashion. Is that correct?
That's correct. And our clients, the doctors who have to deal with the women who then suffer complications of this drug, they're the ones who have been bringing the actual evidence, following the actual science of the complications that can happen when women take this drug. And by removing the safety precautions, by reducing the doctor visits from 3 to 1, removing the in-person requirement, allowing it to be done over the phone or online, you cannot screen for an ectopic pregnancy over the phone. You cannot check to see if the gestational age is 7 weeks, which is the condition that this drug is supposed to be prescribed for. And if it's taken beyond that, the risks to the woman taking it go up exponentially. And it should not be, it's illegal. And it was always illegal to ship this drug through the mail. Well, and so thankfully, the Fifth Circuit upheld Judge Casimir's order on that.
Yeah, those are some great points there. What about this issue regarding the statute of limitations for the FDA's approval of these drugs? Evidently, it ended 6 months ago. Explain that.
Well, that's really the one part of Judge Casimir's order that the Fifth Circuit didn't uphold. So the FDA, the Biden administration has already said they're going to appeal the Fifth Circuit's decision to the Supreme Court. We'll have to see if that is part of any ruling that comes from the Supreme Court or not, and then we'll determine the best course of action after that.
Well, another part of this, and I know our time's about to run out on us here. We've got about a minute or so, but some members of Congress have actually been calling for the FDA to ignore this whole ruling altogether, which just sets an incredibly dangerous precedent for one branch of government to ignore another branch of government simply for political reasons or for whatever. How dangerous is that thought process?
Well, anything that undermines the rule of law in this country is a danger to freedom in this country, because freedom is predicated upon the rule of law. And it's particularly egregious when those in government are the ones advocating for ignoring the rule of law. It sets up a very dangerous dynamic in our country. It widens the divide between the governing and the governed when, you know, the everyday citizen doesn't get to pick and choose which laws they're going to follow and which ones they're going to ignore. And no one in government should be able to do the same, which is basically what the FDA has done for 20 years now, which is why this litigation is so necessary.
Lathan Watts with ADF, thank you so much for the incredible work y'all have done. And thank you for joining us on Washington Watch this evening.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, friends, coming up, breaking news. An investigation is underway on a 21-year-old Air National Guardsman believed to have leaked a trove of classified U.S. intelligence documents. Stay tuned. Jerry Boykin will join me right after this.
Would you like to spend consistent time in God's Word? Then join Family Research Council on an exciting journey through the Bible. FRC's 2-year Bible reading plan helps you to approach daily Bible reading intentionally. You will dive deeper into the nature of God and how His Word speaks into cultural issues of today. All wisdom comes from God, and He has given us the Bible as a way to understand the world. His Word is necessary in our lives, so much so that Christ said, "We are to live on every word that comes from the mouth of God." He calls it our daily bread because we need it daily to sustain us and nourish us spiritually, just like food does physically. Start this adventure today with Family Research Council. When you sign up, we'll text you with daily passages and questions that help prepare you for conversations with your friends and family. To begin this journey, visit frc.org/Bible.
1 Peter 3:15 instructs us to always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks for a reason for the hope that we have. The mission of FRC's Online Center for Biblical Worldview is to carry out that verse by training Christians to advance and defend the faith in their families, communities, and the public square, as now more than ever, we need to be grounded in the truth of God's Word. The Center for Biblical Worldview provides amazing written resources for a wide range of relevant issues, including biblical stances on voting, religious liberty, abortion, marriage, and sexuality. Each of these topics comes as a free downloadable PDF version, abbreviated version, and Spanish translation, along with a prayer guide. To access this written series or to sign up for the Center for Biblical Worldview's monthly newsletter, visit frc.org/worldview.
Did you know that from as early as 12 weeks, and certainly by 20 weeks, an unborn child can feel pain? Did you know the issue of pornography is growing among women? Did you know that pornography, sex trafficking, and abortion are all linked and on the rise across the globe? Issues such as pornography, human trafficking, drug legalization, and abortion are all violations of human dignity and have resulted in the devaluation of human life in our culture. Family Research Council stands firm on the principle that every life has value, ought to be respected, and has been designed for a unique purpose. Educate yourself on the harms of pornography, human trafficking, and abortion so that you can offer hope and help. Learn more at frc.org/life.
All right, friends, welcome back to Washington Watch. Again, I'm your host, Jody Heiss. We're honored to have you joining us this evening. All right, some developing news even as we speak. This afternoon, some federal investigators arrested a 21-year-old Massachusetts Air National Guardsman that they believe leaked a trove of classified U.S. intelligence documents, which both exposed weaknesses in the Ukrainian military and no doubt it's affected U.S. relations with many of our foreign allies. The guardsman is identified as Jack Teixeira. He's been connected to an online group where the leaked documents first appeared. And joining me now to discuss this is FRC's Executive Vice President, retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, who had an amazing 36-year military career, the last four of which was as the Deputy Undersecretary for Defense for Intelligence. And, of course, he was an original member of the Delta Force as well. General, I know you've been on the road. Thank you for making time to join us this evening and to talk about this breaking news.
It's always good to be with you, Jody. Thanks for having me.
Well, listen, what do we know so far? I mean, all this is coming at us pretty quickly right now. What do you know so far?
Well, I don't think we know everything yet. What we do know is just what you said, that he's out of an Air National Guard unit, which is actually an intel unit. So the question then becomes, who gave this man a clearance that he would have access to all of this kind of material? And I will tell you, in terms of counterintelligence, which is how we stop people from doing just this kind of thing, has failed miserably here, not only because they gave this young man, who is very low ranking, they gave him a clearance that gave him access to all of this stuff. And somebody has to explain why this man had a clearance to begin with.
That's a great point. So, are you saying then that it would not be normal protocol for a state National Guardsman to have this type of classified material to begin with?
It is not the norm, no. And if they gave him one, it had to be for a specific purpose. You know, and you know very well, in the intel community, and I spent a couple of years over at the CIA as well, so I've been around this stuff a long time. And you work on a need-to-know basis. In other words, you don't have access to any intelligence unless you have a need to know. And part of the problem here is one of the things that the intel community takes very seriously is exposing methods and sources. And it looks like now that as a result of this, we've exposed both some sources just by virtue of what the intel is. It's clear who it came from. And then methods. How was it collected? And we don't want the enemy to know how we collect our intelligence. And so you've got a bigger problem than just people reading and knowing some of our secrets, but you've also got a really serious problem with exposing some of the people that we got this intel from or some of the methods that we used.
This is my understanding so far, General. This is like one of the largest leaks of classified intelligent information in our military history. And you wonder, how in the world does this young man have access to this type of thing? And so it's frightening to think that this whole thing could develop. Does more of this type of leaking of information take place than what we're aware of? Or is it becoming more and more of a problem these days? What in the world is going on at the Pentagon that is seemingly so susceptible and vulnerable to this type of thing taking place?
Yeah, and after 9/11, we put together the 9/11 Commission and studied that. And one of the conclusions was that too much of the intel was not shared. It was not shared with the other agencies and the people that really did have a need to know. So a law was written called the Intelligence Reform and Terrorism Prevention Act. And what that did was it forced the sharing of information, which meant that you could go to a common server, for example, and see what the Coast Guard has for intelligence, or the Army, or the CIA, for that matter, although they came kicking and screaming on it. And I understand why. It's because of this kind of thing. But it is much easier now to access a broader category of intelligence than what impacts you in the job that you're doing. So I think we went too far in that. And I think now you're going to see probably the Congress, Jody, is going to, I think, roll some of that back.
Well, something needs to happen. I mean, the impact of this for our allies and so forth has got to be significant. You know, that have you been able to review any of the leaked documents? Do you know kind of specifically what type of classified material we're talking about?
I haven't read them. I have had some conversations, and I think the most damaging thing is probably what we have gotten from allies. And that's so obvious that it kills any trust factor that they have with us. And I've seen that happen before. And all of a sudden you find that they're not sharing intelligence with you. But I haven't personally read the stuff, but when you start talking about the Ukraine and all that we've done to help the Ukraine, and then you start talking about them, their shortages, their weaknesses, their strategies, and that type of thing, you are just giving up an ally there and needlessly.
Yeah, that's the point that concerns me that I was getting to. It seems to me there is no way that something like this could happen without having enormously negative impact on our allies as well as just the information itself. So we've got about 30 seconds. Where do we go from here?
I think they've got to go back and look at the intel reform legislation, and we've got to tighten up our counterintelligence capabilities and pay more attention to what we're doing. And I think that's one of the problems. They didn't pay attention to what they were doing when they gave this guy clearance.
General Boykin, you're a hero. Thank you so much for taking time to join us this evening on Washington Watch and bring us up to speed on this issue.
Thank you, Jody.
All right, friends, coming up, I'll be joined by a former FBI agent and the initial whistleblower who brought forth so many of the revelations that we are now discovering about the FBI in regards to how that agency has become politicized. I assure you, you don't want to miss what's coming ahead. We'll be right back after this break. Stay tuned.
Are you a university student?
Do you know a university student, specifically one who wants to grow as a Christian leader to positively influence public policy and the culture? Look no further. Family Research Council has a life-changing 12 to 15-week internship program that has prepared and equipped students to take the next step in their professional journey. With a speaker series focusing on careers and callings, lectures from prominent conservative leaders, and weekly biblical worldview training, students will grow in personal and professional development. Interns have the opportunity to work in policy, communications, event planning, and more. They will gain real-world experience working directly with our experts who will guide them in pursuing careers of influence so that they can make a difference wherever God calls. This paid internship offers fully funded housing in the heart of downtown D.C., giving you the chance to experience our nation's capital. Visit frc.org/internships to apply.
What is biblical masculinity? In our culture of gender confusion, there aren't many examples of godly manhood. Men, husbands, and fathers need to find a model of godly manhood, leadership, and strength. But where can they find it in our culture? Stand Courageous Men's Ministry was created to help men find this model of godly manhood and to develop a strong biblical character, cultivate positive habits, build and rebuild relationships, and make commitments that will move men closer to God's good purpose and design. Men who will stand courageous. Join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference to discuss critical aspects of masculinity. These conferences are led by men who understand the issues men face. They unpack our role as a defender, provider, instructor, and battle buddy so that we can make an influence as a chaplain inside and outside the home. Learn more and find a Stand Courageous event near you at standcourageous.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. It's an honor to have you. I'm Jody Heiss, your host. We are honored to have you on this Thursday edition of the program. All right, throughout this week, among other things, we've been talking about a development of a two-tiered system of justice that's taking place in our country. And many of us, in fact, I'm sure many of you viewing and listening right now, you've sensed this taking place for quite a while. But more recently, concrete proof has emerged to verify our suspicions. Most recently this week, the House Judiciary Committee released documents confirming that the FBI targeted churches with confidential sources and at least one undercover agent. Well, joining me now to discuss this is Kyle Serafin. He's a former FBI agent, and he's the initial whistleblower who brought so many of these revelations to light about a politicized FBI. So, Kyle, welcome to Washington Watch. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Okay, so let's begin. Let's maybe just step back a little bit. Earlier this year, an FBI memo was exposed that detailed attempts to infiltrate Catholic churches in Virginia. We all know about that by this time. And the FBI immediately tried to distance themselves from the memo. In fact, Attorney General Merrick Garland testified before the Senate that the FBI doesn't target Christians, that they don't target churches. But now we have new documents this week that reveal that, in fact, a memo that reveals that the FBI did, in fact, have an effort to infiltrate churches. Is that your understanding as to what happened?
Yeah, it sure is. Unfortunately, I did another review of the initial documents that we had, which were an intelligence domain product. It was an awareness product saying that there was a potential susceptibility of Catholics at the traditional Latin Mass to be recruited by white supremacists, which is a sort of absurd statement for anybody who knows anything about Latin Mass Catholics. But, you know, when we did another review of this, and I looked at it with another intelligence professional who had 2.5 decades of experience, The reread kind of indicated that not only was the document generated by an undercover employee of the FBI, not just a source, but an employee, like a W-2 paid government employee, but it was also likely the actual author of the intelligence product, the intelligence analyst, who I guess decided to go kind of Jack Ryan on this thing and went out to go find that out. And that lined up with the information that we had about who this person was, because he's a young intelligence analyst who graduated from Georgetown University, a Catholic university. So some of the inside baseball about Catholicism and sort of the church politics, if you will, it didn't really line up with source information unless somebody was really, really up on this kind of stuff. So it is my belief that not only what Jordan said, they were a little bit shaky on the intel, whether there was a approved operation or an actually executed operation. And I believe it was actually executed.
Wow. All right. So let's get into the exact terminology of the informant. The FBI informant was a type five. What's it called? Type five analysis or
assessment?
Type five assessment. All right. Explain that to us in layman's terms, we can understand what this FBI agent was actually there to do.
So there's three types of investigative activities that the Bureau engages in. Type one, the first one is an assessment. That's the lowest level. The second is a preliminary investigation. And the third is a full investigation. And those are the kind of terms as they're laid out in the Attorney General guidelines, known as the DIOG. The assessment is the lowest level, but the type five is particularly concerning because the purpose of a type five assessment is to generate a pool of what they call PCHSs, which is a potential confidential human source. And it looks just like any other matrix of potential hiring or anything else. They lay out who they could recruit, and then they rank them based on their access, based on their placement. So how much information they would have access to, the placement, how frequently they have access to this information. And then they sort of decide whether or not they're recruitable or not. And then they go and they target these people. So, in a criminal organization, you may go find a secretary who works in a money laundering operation because she may have access and placement and be susceptible to recruitment. Or you'd find someone who recently went to jail for that. In a church, I don't know who you go and target. Maybe you go get the Eucharistic ministers. Maybe you go and talk to the secretary, to the pastor. But this is, kind of uncharted territory in a lot of ways.
Okay, so this agent was there, type five assessment, specifically looking for people he could recruit to get information on other parishioners in the church or whatever. All right, so I want to know, Kyle, who authorizes something like this, a type five assessment? Is this just something that anyone in the agency can say, hey, let's do this? Or who actually is all? In other words, did the headquarters in D.C., anyone in D.C. know about this?
Not necessarily. The way these types of operations would work is that you would have somebody propose it, and then it would be approved by a supervisor, a GS-14 level supervisor, which is going to be either a supervisory intelligence analyst or a supervisory and special agent. These are the two types of people that would be able to authorize. And then it would have to be reviewed. This would fall under what's called a sensitive investigative matter, or a SIM. And there's all kinds of people that are SIMs. They're journalists. They're people who are in politics. There are people who are in religious figures or academics. So you'd have to go through an additional scrutiny and review if you were trying to recruit somebody in this area. And that would be reviewed by what's called the Chief Division Counsel. That's the top attorney at every given field office. So of the 56 field offices, there is one attorney where the buck stops, and they give the kind of the green light or the red light on whether or not you can do any particular operation. And that includes opening cases, and that includes recording, recruiting sensitive sources and so on.
Well, thank you, Kyle. Listen, unfortunately, our time is wrapped up. I would love to be able to have further discussion with you somewhere in the future. Just seems to me very difficult to believe something so egregious as targeting churches, violation of so many rules and laws, deeply concerning. But thank you for coming on. I look forward to talking with you in the future.
It was my pleasure.
All right, folks, stay tuned. Coming up on Washington Watch right after the break, we have some breaking news coming out of the state of Missouri, and the Attorney General of that state, Andrew Bailey, will be joining me to discuss it. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after the break.
What is biblical masculinity? In our culture of gender confusion, there aren't many examples of godly manhood. Men, husbands, and fathers need to find a model of godly manhood, leadership, and strength. But where can they find it in our culture? Stand Courageous Men's Ministry was created to help men find this model of godly manhood and to develop a strong biblical character, cultivate positive habits, build and rebuild relationships, and make commitments that will move men closer to God's good purpose and design. Men who will stand courageous. Join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference to discuss critical aspects of masculinity. These conferences are led by men who understand the issues men face. They unpack our role as a defender, provider, instructor, and battle buddy so that we can make an influence as a chaplain inside and outside the home. Learn more and find a Stand Courageous event near you at standcourageous.com.
We With the increase in tech censorship of conservatives and Christians, Family Research Council created a tech subscription platform to be sure we don't go completely dark due to censorship. It is important to us that we stay connected with you and that you stay informed. So if we get canceled, you can still access updates on faith, family, and freedom. How? Just text STAND to 67742 to sign up for our text alerts, and you will get FRC's content straight to your phone. Again, just text STAND to 67742, and you will get alerts on the biggest stories of the day. With just a simple text, always have access to our content and stay informed and connected with like-minded community. Text STAND to 67742. That's STAND to 67742.
Are you a university student? Do you know a university student, specifically one who wants to grow as a Christian leader to positively influence public policy and the culture? Look no further. Family Research Council has a life-changing 12 to 15-week internship program that has prepared and equipped students to take the next step in their professional journey. With a speaker series focusing on careers and callings, lectures from prominent conservative leaders, and weekly biblical worldview training, students will grow in personal and professional development. Interns have the opportunity to work in policy, communications, event planning, and more. They will gain real-world experience working directly with our experts who will guide them in pursuing careers of influence so that they can make a difference wherever God calls. This paid internship offers fully funded housing in the heart of downtown DC, giving you the chance to experience our nation's capital. Visit frc.org/internships to apply.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. Glad to have you on board with us this evening. All right, we've got some breaking news today that I'm pleased to bring your way here on Washington Watch. Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey issued emergency regulations this afternoon that, in effect, will end transgender intervention procedures for minors. This is the first action of this kind in the nation. Now, we certainly hope it's not going to be the last, but this is the first, and we are honored. You know, especially when you consider the dangerous nature of these surgeries and the experimental nature of it all, this is big, big news. Joining me now to explain why this action was necessary and more is Missouri's Attorney General himself, Andrew Bailey. Mr. Attorney General, welcome back to Washington Watch. Glad to have you.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, listen, let me begin just by commending you for your courage and your leadership on this issue. This is a huge step today, and I know you're covered up, but thank you for taking time to be on the program with us to discuss it.
Well, thank you for having me on. This is all about protecting children for me, and as a foster parent, an adoptive parent, a father of four, there's no end to the amount of energy I'll put towards protecting children in the state of Missouri.
Well, we all appreciate it so much. I know probably, a month or so ago, you were actually on this program with Tony. And at that time, you had issued a temporary emergency stay against these procedures for minors. So what has led you to go from the temporary stay to now making this permanent?
Well, several months ago, a whistleblower came forward that worked at a pediatric transgender clinic in St. Louis and notified my office of what, if true, amounts to nothing short of child abuse. And so that whistleblower, we have to take her seriously. She's a progressive who self-identifies as someone who supports transgender rights. And the things she says she saw going on at the pediatric transgender clinic in St. Louis scared her and concerned her enough that she came forward and was willing to swear under oath to the veracity of her allegations. And so we called for a moratorium on administration of puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones and referral of minors for irreversible surgeries to put a stop to it, to give us time to look into what was happening. And we launched a multi-agency investigation, the first of its kind in the nation. The clinic refused the moratorium and fought back, claiming that they were the only clinic in the state of Missouri providing this kind of care. Well, we know it's not care. We know it's woke left-wing ideology, science projects, experimentation on children masquerading as medicine. And subsequent investigation revealed that there's a clandestine and shadowy network of these transgender children's clinics operating across the state of Missouri. And so we had to push back. We had to put safety guards in place. And that's what this emergency rule does. It holds providers accountable and ensures that parents understand that these drugs are experimental in nature and have serious long-term health consequences for these poor children.
Wow. Well, that's powerful. And the nail that you hit on the head that I think so many people feel, but you just said it outright, was the procedures taking place really amounts to child abuse, what's going on here. So you've had an investigation underway now for X number of months on the Washington University Transgender Center there in St. Louis. Can you tell us some of the specifics of types of egregious behavior and abuse, as you call it, that you were able to uncover?
Well, so far, what we know, and additional whistleblowers are coming forward even as we speak, but what we know thus far is the allegations include that the clinic does not track adverse consequences of the administration of these drugs or the surgeries. So they provide these science experimentation on children, and they don't bother to figure out what happens on the back end, if it's helping or harming the kids. And that's at the basis of this emergency rule. It's based on science. We have six pages of footnotes, of documentation, medical journals, and science that back up what several of these European countries said years ago, which is that this kind of treatment is not evidence-based and is dangerous. We also have allegations that parents were forced into consenting to their children's treatment. There would be instances where the kid with the mental health condition would be standing there without any kind of psych assessment and with a refusal to provide any kind of psych assessment on behalf of the clinic. And a clinician in front of the child would say to the parent, "Do you want a dead daughter or a live son?" And thus cajole the parent into consenting to these dangerous treatments. So
let's repeat that. You said these individuals who were performing these procedures on minors would literally say to the parents, "Do you want a dead daughter or a live son or vice versa?"
That is exactly the allegation.
Implying that if you don't do this, if you don't allow this, your child is going to commit suicide. Is that what they were? I'm assuming that's what they were getting to.
Absolutely. And that's what's so scary. I mean, look, these kids come in confused about their body. 75% of the kids, according to the affidavits, say that they learned about their gender on TikTok. I mean, think about that for a minute. This is scary stuff. And rather than providing psychology and psychiatry and then tracking the positive outcomes from just talking to the kids, we race to the administration of puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones that cause blindness, brain swelling, loss of bone density, and ultimately referring surgery and injecting suicidal ideation into a conversation where it didn't exist before that. They're not treating mental health. They're making it worse.
Wow. Yeah, this is just unbelievable information here that we've all, many of us have been studying, been reading. We know this kind of stuff. And you referenced it, in fact, just a few moments ago. We have so many European countries, Finland, Sweden, the UK, and other places that are reversing course on these type of procedures. And yet here in the United States, it seems like we continue pushing forward with this in spite of not only other countries, but as you're bringing up, the science clearly is telling us this is a bad pathway to go. So why is our country so far behind on the science when it comes to this topic?
Well, radical left-wing individuals would rather push a progressive woke ideology and do so at the expense and to the harm and detriment of children. I mean, that's why they don't want to track the adverse health consequences from administration of these drugs and for the surgeries. And that's why the media never reports on the six pages of footnotes provided in our emergency rule that demonstrate that scientifically and medically, these are dangerous courses of behavior that have long-term permanent, debilitating consequences.
Well, it's like there's no question in when you're in a battle like this, that you being on the tip of the spear and the first to end this type of procedures on a national basis, you are going to, and you probably already are, taking a significant number of hits from the left. In fact, I believe I read somewhere today that Planned Parenthood has already filed a lawsuit against your office. And no doubt there's going to be further litigation. How are you holding up on this? How do you feel in the midst of the battle?
Hey, I'm a warrior. I served in the United States Army, took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution, signed up for a combat arms branch of service, volunteered to go to Iraq, participated in the largest offensive operation of 2005. So I've seen my worst days on this earth, and I'll tell you, I can take it. We will continue to fight the good fight. I was willing to put my life on the line to protect and defend the Constitution and the rule of law. I took that fight to the battlefield in the war on terror, and I'm proud to be leading that fight now in the courtroom here in the state of Missouri and across the country.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for doing that. Are you calling on other attorneys general, by the way, in other states to consider similar actions?
Absolutely. Look, this is an innovative approach, both the way in which we marshaled state resources for a multi-agency investigation, thereby leaving no stone unturned and using several different bodies of law to attack this problem set, but also by promulgating a rule under our Consumer Protection Rulemaking Authority to ensure that there's compliance with state statute. I mean, these are tools that have not been used in this fight before. This is an innovative approach and really can serve as a model that could be exported to other states.
Wow. Well, that's amazing. Thank you for your incredible leadership on this issue. If I can switch gears, I want to hit on another topic that you also have been very much involved with from the get-go. But we talked about it on the program a little bit earlier this evening, the Fifth Circuit's decision late last night regarding chemical abortions. You were part of an effort to block the FDA's unlawful ruling that allowed for abortion pills to be sent through the mail. So your thoughts on the ruling? It's got to be very satisfying to see how this thing is developing.
Well, certainly the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, the three-judge panel reversed part of the trial court's order. We liked the trial court's order in its entirety. I mean, that's why we filed the amicus brief that brought these serious health concerns, the danger these drugs posed to women and children. We brought that to the attention of the judge by filing our own amicus brief. We're encouraged by the ruling of the trial court. Once it went up to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, you know, it's important to note that that panel, the three-judge panel, kept in place the ban on shipment of the dangerous drugs through the mail, which clearly violates federal and state law. So proud to get a win there. We're hopeful that the remainder of the trial court order will be reinstated. And there's still a lot of litigation to go. I mean, the litigation can go for rehearing en banc, in which case it'll go in front of the entire Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, or certainly the Department of Justice is asking the United States Supreme Court to weigh in. And we're happy to take the fight there as well, because there is no end that we won't go to protect women's health and the unborn.
Yeah, well, I think it probably most certainly is going to be going to the Supreme Court, but we've got a great step in the right direction with that. You're probably aware the president's in Ireland right now, and at a White House press conference earlier today, the White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre gave the Biden administration's reaction to this ruling. I wanted to play this clip and get your reaction to what she had to say.
We're going to continue to fight. We're going to promise to do that for Americans across the country, and we believe we will prevail because we believe that the law is on our side.
All right. She believes the law is on her side. What do you think?
It defies rational thought. I mean, look, at the end of the day, the federal statute explicitly prohibits using the mail to ship abortion drugs. State law certainly does. And so that she's trying to undermine the rule of not support the rule of law. And they're going to use unelected federal bureaucrats to do it. That flies in the face of our constitutional structure. So I'm confident in the ultimate success of our cause, and we'll keep fighting the good fight.
Well, you know, there's also, and I brought this up to one of my earlier guests today, I'd like to get your reaction to it as well, but there are literally some members of Congress who have called for the FDA to ignore this ruling altogether. And that just seems like an extremely dangerous precedent to go down when you have one branch of government encouraging another branch to completely disregard the decisions of the judiciary branch. What are your thoughts when you hear these type of comments?
It undermines the rule of law. It undermines our constitutional structure. It's saddening. It's saddening that our democratic republic has reached this point in time. I mean, both sides of the aisle used to elevate the rules of the game above the players and the outcome. And it saddens me that Biden and his ilk have jettisoned that approach and are so determined to push this radical left-wing ideology that they're willing to do so at the expense of women and children's health.
Well, I think there's some, I think it's in the ballpark of 19 states now that have been involved in particularly the argument about disallowing the abortion drug to be sent through the mail. Do you anticipate now that we're going to see growing numbers of states jumping on board and understanding that not only the mail issue, the sending through the mail, but also just the danger nature of the drugs as a whole?
Absolutely. I mean, look, that was the entire purpose of the amicus brief that we individually filed in the Texas suit at the United States District Court level, was to highlight the dangerous nature of these drugs and the deleterious health consequences that women face. I mean, the left will tell you that they're about protecting women, but then they push these dangerous drugs. It makes no sense. So we're going to continue to fight the good fight to protect women and children, and especially the unborn.
Yeah, you know, you bring up an excellent point there. They claim to be so concerned about women's health, but this drug in particular, the numbers of women who end up in the ER having taken this, and there's no medical professional assisting. There's no, I mean, these women are on their own at home or wherever they may be taking a drug that was not adequately studied to begin with and has diverse consequences on them and, of course, many deaths and all sorts of other health issues. And yet, for political purposes, they keep claiming that this is as innocent as Tylenol or something along those natures. And it's just harmful. I'm sure you've probably had all sorts of people come forth. You mentioned whistleblowers, but are you seeing a number of women come forward talking about the detrimental effects of the drugs?
Well, that's absolutely true. And again, if you read the amicus brief we filed, it really details, it enumerates all those serious health consequences. Exactly like you said, if Biden has his way, he will use the FDA to isolate women to administer a dangerous drug in a dangerous procedure that's going to hurt the woman and kill a child. And we're not going to let that happen.
So why do they want to do this? And I know our time's wrapping up here, but what is the motive behind any administration that would be pushing an untested drug upon women and young girls, really, for that matter, knowing that this thing has not been tested properly? What is the motive, in your opinion, behind all of this?
Well, it's hard to ascertain. I mean, the best I can say is that they're blinded by hate, they're blinded by lies, and they don't care about the sanctity of life, either the life of the mother, of the child, and they hate us more than they love women and children. And that's frightening.
It is frightening. Well, listen, I just want to say again, thank you for your incredible leadership on this transgender procedure that you have led the way in our entire nation today by putting a stop to that. Every one of us pause to say thank you for your incredible leadership in that regard. And our hope that many other attorney generals will join you and many other states. And also when it comes to the abortion drug, what a great example of leadership you've been. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me on, and thank you for your continued prayers and support.
Well, you've got it. Thank you so much for joining us. All right, friends, I tell you, we've had an incredible program with a lot of breaking news bringing your way, and that's the purpose, is why we're here, to keep you informed as to what's going on in America from a Christian worldview perspective. So as always, it's our deep honor to have you and to bring you this information. We want to encourage you, never give up, shine brightly, put on the Lord Jesus Christ, and keep moving on, keep standing. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time right here.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.